So last week, one of my son, who's watching at home with my wife and my daughter, one of Zeke's school projects at Kitchen Table Academy, also known as homeschool, it was to plant a seed and to watch it grow. So last Sunday, we got him a small pot. We got him some pot soil to put into that pot, and he put the seeds into the dirt. And now both pots are currently sitting outside in the sunlight, drinking in the rain of last week, and Lord willing, Zeke will get to watch his plants grow. But right around Tuesday, when he was playing outside and I was waiting to join him to go out there and study, I started watching him through the window, sort of interfere in the process of his plant's growth. And his interference was good. It was well-intentioned. He was trying to accelerate the plant's growth rather rapidly. So in the back of our yard, we've got some weeds and there's some fully grown dandelions that are in the back, right, with the yellow flower on the top. So what he does is he reaches down and he pulls up the flowers from the soil along with part of their stem, and then he runs and inserts the flowers into his pot soil, these pots that are at the front of the yard. And he does this like four times, and I'm watching him. He does this four times, and then right after that, as I come outside, he walks up to me and says, "Dad, look," he says this jokingly, "Dad, look, look how my plants have grown." Which I tell him, right, doesn't work like that. He's like, I know, but look, can you just imagine if they grew that quickly? Well, thinking about that and watching him, I think that's how the Christian life works too, or how I know I see the Christian life working as well sometimes. And maybe you do this as well. Sometimes people refer to the Christian life as what we see here in Romans chapter 8, verse 4, when it talks about life in the Spirit or living in accordance with the Spirit, those who walk according to the Spirit, or by the Spirit of God's guidance or leadership. And God's Spirit, we know, is the promise for everyone who trusts in Jesus' sacrificial work in our place for our sin. That's what Jesus has come to do, to give us God's Spirit to live within us, to guide us and to lead us. So God commits to putting his Spirit within us like seed in the soil to transform our desires and to cause us to walk in his ways, as the book of Ezekiel 36 says. And so even though we might believe this, right, even though we might affirm this truth with our minds, at times we still, if we are willing to admit it, we run to the back of the yard picking up dead flowers, and then we try to put them in the soil to make it appear as though something's happening within us, that we're doing something in the Christian life that's meaningful, that's acceptable to God. Many times as Christians, we are functionally more committed to doing than being. And both of these things are important. As followers of Jesus, we do. Our behaviors are changed. Our attitudes are changed. There is action involved. But living according to the Spirit, it's more about being. It's more like the seed that's planted in the soil rather than our planting dead flowers on top of it. And so that's what we're looking at today in this passage. And we're trying to answer the question particularly, what does it mean, right? In light of Jesus doing for us what we can't do for ourselves, what does it mean in light of him taking our guilt, our penalty on himself, forgiving us, giving us acceptance before God? If this being made righteous, as Romans 8 talks about, is for people who do not walk according to the flesh, but according to the Spirit, then what does it mean for us to walk according to the Spirit? That's the question that we're asking and trying to answer in this passage today. And so Romans chapter 8, verses 5 through 9 is this series of comparisons between living according to the flesh and living according to the Spirit. And so what we want to do today is we want to make our way through each of these comparisons, these three comparisons that we'll see here in verses 5 through 9, to try to get a better understanding about what it means to live according to the flesh or to live according to the Spirit. So overall, the main point that we want to see here today from these verses, the main point that we want to see is this. If God is for us, right, the title of our series, if God is for us, then it means that he is committed to changing the deepest part of us. If God is for us, then it means that he is committed to changing the deepest part of us. So we're going to see that in these three comparisons. Comparison number one. Last week, we ended by stating what Jesus does by becoming a sin offering for us, bearing the punishment of our sin in his body. And he does this for people who walk and live in alignment with God's Spirit and submission to God's Spirit. What that means is that Jesus does this for people who see God's law and who then see ourselves and see how we can't fulfill God's law. We can't be righteous. We might desire to do it, as Paul talked about in Romans chapter 7, and yet we can't ever seem to get it right because there's another law, there's another power of sin that exists within us. So because of Jesus, the promise of no condemnation, no guilt, no judgment is for us. For those who don't walk according to the flesh, but who walk according to the Spirit. And it's those who have placed our faith and our trust in Jesus. We're the ones who feel the freedom and the life that comes as a result of not having to worry about whether or not God is going to punish us whenever we mess up again and whenever we sin. Because we know that Jesus has fulfilled the righteous requirement of God's law for us. But there's an alternative. For people who live according to the flesh, this promise of no condemnation, it's not for them. And it's not that God is holding out on them. They don't want this promise. They don't value it. It doesn't mean anything to them. They can't appreciate it. Their eyes, as we talked about last week, aren't looking to God's law and then looking at themselves and seeing their weakness and their inability. Rather, they only look at themselves. They see themselves as a standard. They see themselves as the only way to knowing and finding life and joy and satisfaction and peace. So how they live and what they desire isn't determined by God, it's determined by them. And that's what Paul means here when he says that this is what it means to live according to the flesh. And another word or phrase that communicates living according to the flesh is our sin nature. Our sin nature. What that means is that our sin nature is the very core of who we are, and it's the way that we all come into this world born into sin, shaped in iniquity, as Psalms 51 says. So we said it last week and sometime before in this series, but the idea of our sin nature communicates more about who we are at our core rather than just what we do and our behaviors. It says more about the disposition and the attitude that's at the seat of our lives than merely our external behaviors and our actions. Our sin nature communicates who we are as fallen image bearers of God. It's our nature. So when we think about nature and the nature of something, nature is why birds don't make you coffee in the morning. Nature is why plants don't grow from the stem down or from the flower down, but from the ground up through seeds. Nature speaks of design and hardwiring, design that is fixed and unchanged. And if we did see any of these things take place, right? If birds became baristas, then that would be an exception to nature, what we would call unnatural. But if something or someone came along and acted on something, if it acted on birds and then turned them and transformed them into baristas, or if it acted on a dead plant and caused it to become alive and start to grow again, then we would call that supernatural. Something powerful outside of what's natural would act on either the bird or the plant and functionally change or transform something about it. So when we talk about nature and our sin nature, we see that all the way back in Genesis chapter 3, because of the selfishness and disobedience of our first parents, Adam and Eve, we see, and even Paul talks about this in Romans chapter 6, that sin entered the world and it fundamentally changed them at the core, at the very seat of who they are. They neglected God's righteousness and his requirements, his law and his power and his authority, and they chose to put themselves in that seat So subsequently, and even consequently, everybody who comes into this world functions in the exact same way. We choose ourselves over God. That is our mindset, as Romans 8 communicates here. And it's from this disposition, this attitude, this mindset that our lifestyle and our behaviors and our actions flow. We don't sin and then become sinners. No, rather, it's because we are sinners that we sin. And the Bible communicates to us the reality that we can't change this about ourselves any more than the leper could change its spots. This is our fallen nature. It's not how God originally designed us, but it's what sin plunges us into because of the disobedience of one man, as Romans 6 says. So again, this doesn't mean that because of our sin nature, we're always doing explicitly bad and evil things, and that we're unable to do things that appear good. People do good things all the time, right? Feed the homeless and build hospitals, help their neighbors. Rather, this means that at the core of who we are broken. We're not functioning as God intended for us to function and designed for us to function. The motivation behind everything that we do, both good and bad, isn't God's glory. It's not honoring God. It's not seeking God. Rather, it's seeking ourselves. It's seeking our purposes. So that's what it means, essentially, to live according to the flesh. In Romans chapter 8, verse 5 says that's what's behind the living, or that mindset that's set on things of the flesh. So again, we act out of who we are. So what are the things of the flesh? What are the things of the flesh? Well, they're our desires. They're what our senses crave and dictate to us, telling us that this is what you need for life and enoughness. Whatever that may be, relationships, sin, pleasures, careers. What our senses crave and dictate to us that we need for life and enoughness. Galatians, the book of Galatians, that letter that Paul wrote to them, it describes the things that we're willing to do in our bodies and in our flesh in pursuit of life and enoughness. Galatians chapter 5, verse 19 says this. It says, the works of the flesh, essentially the manifestations or the expressions of our sinful nature, the things that flow out of that core that are looking for life and satisfaction and enoughness, the works of the flesh are obvious. Sexual immorality, moral impurity, promiscuity, idolatry, sorcery, hatreds, strife, jealousy, outbursts of anger, selfish ambitions, dissensions, factions, envy, drunkenness, carousing, and anything similar. These are the external behaviors or the results, the works that flow from who we are. The things that we do in pursuit of life and peace and satisfaction and joy. So many times we look at this as the do not do list, right? These bad behaviors. But let's not get solely stuck on the behaviors. These things are the fruits of a root that is buried deep within us. It's not just about not doing these things, right? It's about addressing the very thing that causes these kinds of responses. Again, a sin nature that is set on ourselves being our own law and our own standard. And our satisfaction and enoughness is being our only aim. The prioritizing of ourselves. Our sin nature will cause us to respond in this way. Again, in explicitly bad and grievous ways, things that we see in this list, but also things like envy, dissensions and divisions. Selfish ambition springs from this root. So if we just take a look at the world around us, One example of the way that we see these things is in the promotion of the sexual ethics that we see taking place in our culture. These kind of things are rooted from a place of, what, we hear it and see it all the time, right? I'm in charge. I'm in charge of me, my body, and whatever I do with my body or however I feel in my body. Whatever I say goes, because this is the way to happiness and joy and peace and satisfaction. This is the way to enoughness, me getting to determine who I am and how I feel. Not God, not his law or his authority or his standard, but me. And any disagreement with my law and my standard is unacceptable. That's just one way that we live according to the flesh. That everybody in this world is born with this at our core. But again, don't just look at the explicit things in that list. Things like selfish ambition and divisiveness and envy come from the very same place. So again, brothers and sisters, this is who we are as fallen humanity. We are people who live according to the flesh. This is the diagnosis that's on every person who's ever lived in this planet. Yes, we bear the image of our Creator. We're image bearers of God, and yet we are broken reflections of that. And that displays itself most clearly in our mindset. Who's in control? Who's in charge? How we live, how we behave, what we pursue, and who we love. That displays itself most clearly in our mindset that's governed by our sinful nature that fuels our actions. So listen, this is really important because if we see the world in this way, if we see what God says about broken and fallen image bearers, if we see what he says in his word, it'll keep us from believing the lie about what our greatest problems are. See, so often because we see the sin and the brokenness that exists in this world committed by people or committed against people, we think that the ultimate solution is in fixing or regulating or just accepting certain behaviors and actions or pursuing external solutions to the brokenness around us. Listen, regulations and modifications and corrections and man-made solutions, they are good things and should be pursued in a way that aligns with God. Sure, it's his purpose and his grace that he designs us to address and to speak to these things by acting benevolently and justly. But all of the brokenness and the sin that we see in our world and in ourselves, again, it comes from a deeper cause. Sin's entrance and presence and prevalence in this world. This is our greatest problem. So although modification and regulation and all those types of things are good, transformation is the only true and permanent solution. We need a nature change. We need something supernatural to break into our lives and to transform the thing that's at the very core of us that causes us and everybody in this world to act and respond and to behave and to think the way that we do. Transformation is necessary. And the good news is that this is what God does through Jesus. He sends his son into this world to do what we cannot do for ourselves. We cannot change or transform ourselves. Something supernatural must take place. Something miraculous must take place at the very root and core of who we are if we are going to be acceptable to God. And we see that through Jesus. He comes into this world, and by God's power, he transforms all who trust in him by faith. He gives us, as we've talked about the last few weeks, as a heart surgeon, he gives us a new heart with new affections and new desires that cause us to love God and to respond to him when we formerly didn't want anything to do with God. And as a spirit surgeon, He puts his spirit within us, right? And as Ezekiel chapter 36 says, he causes us to walk in his ways, to obey him when we formerly couldn't do that in our own power, in our own effort, when we didn't want anything to do with God. He supernaturally and powerfully intervenes and transforms the thing that's at the very core of who we are. This is the good news and the message, again, that transforms you and me, but also has the power to transform every single person in this world who lives according to the flesh and cannot change or transform themselves. It matters that we see the world in this way, brothers and sisters, because God has a solution to the problem of sin that plagues and affects us all. So verse 5. Verse 5 goes on to say and tell us that there's an alternative to living according to the flesh. But those who live according to the Spirit have their minds set on the things of the Spirit. So the same principle is true. Living in a way that's aligned with God's Spirit comes from having a disposition or an attitude that's informed and submitted to God's Spirit. We can see this isn't just about flipping a switch and just changing your behavior or subscribing to a religion or a set of ideals that you now practice when you once formerly did things differently when you were living in the flesh. Again, this is a new nature. We can only live according to the Spirit when the Spirit has been put within us, when God puts his Spirit within us. Again, this implies that something supernatural and transformative has taken place in the core of a person that causes us to think and desire and live differently. That's what it means to be a Christian, brothers and sisters, to have a new nature within us. Again, not just to switch religious teams, not to take the dead flower of ourselves and to put us into different soil and hope for a different outcome. No, but it's to have a different disposition planted at the very core of who we are that's aligned to God and who he's revealed himself to be. Again, that only comes from God's miraculous and supernatural power that he works in causing us to be born again. Where Jesus says, as the Spirit blows like a wind on our hearts, making us alive when we were formerly dead and unresponsive to God. And so as a result, God has put his Spirit within us. That means that we're setting our minds on the things of the Spirit. Those who live according to the Spirit set their minds on the things of the Spirit. So what are those things? Jump back to Galatians. The very same passage, it calls those things, some of those things, fruit. Life-giving results. Not just dead works or just actions or behaviors that come from that formerly sinful root, but life-giving fruit. Meaning that the nature of our alignment with the Spirit will produce realities within us, such as what it says here in Galatians, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Again, we saw that list of behaviors on the list of the works of the flesh, but now we see some more behaviors here, and we don't want to just get caught up in these behaviors either. Because these are things that people can do and emulate without any assistance or guidance from the Spirit. But something is different about this fruit here. Again, this doesn't mean that Christians are the only people who can display these kind of behaviors, and it also doesn't mean that Christians are incapable or immune to displaying the things that we see in the works of the flesh. What this list here means is that something else, a love and a desire for God and alignment to him, is the guiding disposition. It's the root and the dominant attitude of our lives. And it's from these affections that we see a God-produced and God-glorifying expressions. That's the difference. The root, the core, the seat of who we are has been changed. And from that we see these realities that align and flow from the very character and nature of God. Again, the fundamental stuff and the power that's at work within someone who lives by the Spirit is different from the power that's at work in those who live according to the flesh. This is what it means to be a Christian, a follower of Jesus. Not simply that our behaviors have changed, but at the very core of who we are, self no longer sits on that throne. God does. God's Spirit guides us. He leads us. He points us to the reality of who God is and who He's revealed Himself to be. And He causes us to walk in God's ways, to love and desire God. Not with a fear, a cold fear of the law, or fear of His punishment, or His rejection. But a love that says, because I love Him, because He has saved me, because He is worthy of praise and adoration, I'm going to walk in His way. I'm going to obey and follow Him, because this is the way to life. And that points to comparison number two. The next comparison speaks to that, or essentially to the results or the outcome of these mindsets. The mindset of the flesh and the mindset of the spirit. It's where these realities and these expressions that we see in these lists, it's where they lead to. Verse 6, it says, "Now the mindset of the flesh is death, but the mindset of the spirit is life and peace." So to put it simply, the outcome of living with the disposition and the mindset of the flesh we see is death. Those works, they lead to death, fruitlessness. The mindset of the flesh is death, and it's always been death. If you flip over one page in from Romans chapter 8, you see Romans chapter 6, it makes this point repeatedly. If we offer ourselves to sin, Paul writes that it leads to death. He also writes that the outcome of being enslaved to sin is death. And then he goes on to say in Romans 6:23 that the wages of sin, what sin pays you for doing what it is you do and following it, what you earn by committing sin, is death. Death, death, death. And brothers and sisters, that doesn't just mean that you'll stop living and then lie in the ground one day. And what Paul means here is that this is a spiritual reality and a status that we face, and that we live under this eternal condemnation and punishment from God, both right now and forever. This is spiritual death, spiritual deadness. It's to exist in unresponsiveness and deadness to God, void of the life that He intends for us to experience. It's to function and live in this world in a way that God never intended for us to. And it's to meet His judgment and His punishment for living in that way. So listen, all death isn't physical. Paul's not just talking about not living anymore, not physically living. We can exist right now in spiritual deadness by not knowing and experiencing the life of God that He created for us to know. Listen, if you're in here or watching online and you wouldn't consider yourself a follower of Jesus, this is what God's word says is the status of everyone who does not know Him and follow Him and believe and trust in the finished work of His Son. It's a reality of spiritual deadness, where if we are governed by our sin nature, then it leads us into pursuing the things that feel good, that sound good, look good, all in a quest for life, for satisfaction and joy. Yet all of those things that promise us life and satisfaction and joy in this world or even in ourselves, sin, they can never make good on those promises. Paul says in the book of Ephesians that we are dead in our trespasses and sins, unresponsive to God. So what's the alternative? Well, the mindset of the Spirit is life and peace. Life and peace. That's where following the Spirit and living according to the Spirit leads. Which means that when God's Spirit has been supernaturally placed at the seat or the core of our lives through our faith in Jesus, giving us a desire to love and obey God, then it means that we will know God's life and God's peace. We'll know that and experience that in a somewhat veiled way right now in this world that we live in that's fallen and broken. God gives this to us. He puts this in us by giving us His Spirit when we believe and trust in Jesus. Life and peace that we could never earn. That we can know with full assurance right now that we have. We're not working to earn it. We're not seeking out different things in this world that could never make good on their promises. No, we have this life and peace in Jesus. So think about the difference in between these two outcomes. Think about when both of these realities put their feet on the floor on Monday morning and go out into this world, think about how they're living. Living in the flesh and being guided by the sin nature means living a life in search of, constantly in search of life and peace by being guided by, again, what feels good, what feels right, and thinking and hoping that it will be enough. And then constantly being let down, frustrated, depressed, addicted, broken. That's where living in the flesh leads. Always on a pursuit and a chase that will eventually lead to death and destruction. While living in the Spirit, again, it means already having the very life and peace of God that we were intended and created to experience existing within us. Not because of anything we've done or haven't done, but because of the grace and the mercy and the love of God displayed through Jesus. It's having eternal and abundant God-given life and peace. And then living out of that. Living from that reality. Living without the pressure or the burden of trying to squeeze life and enoughness out of things that could never deliver it. Think about how you could enjoy your career, your family, your relationships, the pleasures in this world, when you are not looking to them ultimately for life and enoughness and peace and satisfaction. But you say, whether I have these things or whether I don't have these things, God is enough. I have the life of God in my soul. I love Him. I desire Him. In His presence, there is fullness of joy, and at His right hand, there are pleasures forevermore. I'm not trying to earn that. Whether the rest of my days are filled with suffering and affliction and pain, or whether they're filled with joy and satisfaction, I have God. That's what it means to have the very life of God in our souls right now. We have peace. We have joy. We have what we were created to experience. Again, one road is a dark path filled with a bunch of broken and painful realities that eventually leads to destruction and judgment. And the other way is a bright path with clarity, a bright future, a hope. Although it's not without troubles in this world, but we can know that we have an unimpaired, undamaged, and whole life and peace with God. That when we are living according to the Spirit, we might have troubles, but no worries. We might have pains and problems, but no unshakable fears. God is for us and with us. In the biggest way that He's committed Himself to us is by giving us His Spirit within us. book of Ephesians chapter 1 talks about this being sealed with the Spirit. This engagement ring is how it's more literally translated, that God gives us to show us that he makes good on his promise, to see to it that we will have life and peace. Last comparison, and we'll wrap up here. So we've seen the difference between the living of those who have their minds set on the flesh and the Spirit. We've seen the result of those who have their minds set on the flesh and the Spirit. But now Paul presses in a little bit more, back on nature. Nature and the kind of relationship that we have with either our flesh or with the Spirit. Look at verses 8 and 9. Just to summarize it, those verses tell us that we are either in the flesh, uses those phrases, or we are in the Spirit, which means that we're not actually the ones in charge or in control. We're not the ones calling the shots, right? To live in the flesh makes you feel as if you are calling the shots, but we're not. Paul talks about back in Romans chapter 6 how both of these realities exist and that we are serving. More literally, we are enslaved to sin or to righteousness. We are governed, guided, dictated to either by the flesh and our sin nature or by the Spirit and our transformed nature. That's the realities. We are not rogue agents. You are in the Spirit if God has put his Spirit in you to live, or you're in the flesh. John chapter 8 says, we're enslaved to sin. So those are the two realities. That's the relationship that we have with these natures. The new nature of God's Spirit or the old nature of the flesh. So verse 7 communicates a major implication of that reality and what it means to be in the Spirit or the flesh. Particularly, being in the flesh or in the Spirit means something firstly about our allegiance. Again, verse 7, being in the flesh, it's not just this neutral position or place when it comes to God. Being in the flesh doesn't mean that we just exist sort of in this place where we haven't chosen God yet. We could choose God, but in the meantime, we're just kind of on our own, left to figure it out. To be in the flesh isn't a neutral place or position. It's moving in a direction towards sin and ourselves. And on the contrary, it's moving away from or against God. There's no neutrality when you're living in the flesh. There's no neutrality when we're being governed by our sin nature. Verse 7 means that if we're living with the mindset of the flesh, then we are enemies of God. There is hostility. The mindset of the flesh is hostile to God. It doesn't want God. As Romans chapter 1 says, that if we live according to the flesh, we are haters of God. And it makes us kind of uncomfortable, right? Particularly in the context and the day that we live in, right? That's pretty binary language for a world that is saturated in nuance and indifference, where many times people who follow their sin nature and don't follow Jesus, they might just say, well, listen, look, do you. You can have Jesus, you can have God. I don't hate Jesus or God, they're just not for me. God can do whatever he wants to do, just stay over there. Or even as Christians, right, we're prone to even believing sometimes that if we can commit sin in a way that's unaffected by the character or nature of God, that it's somehow, it's okay. God doesn't really feel any kind of way. I guess he forgives us. He knows our heart. Grace will abound, as some people said in Romans chapter 5. No, listen, if we can commit sin in a way and follow our sin nature in a way that's unaffected by the character of God and who he has revealed himself to be, his holiness, his righteousness, his goodness, his justice, his mercy, what he loves, what he hates, if we can practice and commit sin in a way that's unaffected by who he is and who he's revealed himself to be in his word and in his law, then it means that we are operating in hostility to God. And again, it doesn't mean that we're necessarily foaming at the mouths and throwing bricks at God and telling him to go somewhere. Well, this is more communicating a status, not just an emotional response, but a status that communicates allegiance. The sinful nature says, I don't want God. We are against him. We want nothing to do with who he is and who he's revealed himself to be. And by following sin, we are agreeing with that. We are allegiant to that. We're either ruled by sin or the Spirit. And our wills, our desires, what we want to do is allegiant to whoever we're following. What's the basis for that, right? The basis for that allegiance? Go on in verse 7. The mind of the flesh is hostile to God because it does not submit to God's law. There's the evidence. In choosing not to submit to God's law, we set ourselves against God. Again, let's not get this backwards. Breaking God's law and pursuing the sinful nature, again, by doing that, that doesn't make us sinners. It points to the reality that we have a sinful nature, that that's who we are. And again, we need transformation. It does not submit to his law. It doesn't want to. It's unwilling to. It would rather pursue another law, the law of sin that's in our flesh, as Paul talks about it. But it doesn't stop there. Verse 7 speaks to allegiance, but it also speaks to ability. Sure, there's this unwillingness to submit to God's law, but there's something beneath our unwillingness to obey God's law, and that's our inability to obey God's law. Again, this is nature. This is telling your dog to get in the car and drive you to work. Can't do it. It's not going to happen. It probably doesn't want to, but it is unable to. It needs something greater. You can train it, send it to school. You can put it in a science lab and get it to do a bunch of things like they do with different animals. But unless there is something supernatural that takes place, it's not going to work. The reality is the same for us. If we're living in the flesh, enslaved to sin's power, and we don't want to obey God's law, but it also means that we cannot. It's a logical impossibility that we cannot serve two masters, sin or God. Sure, yes. But it's also a spiritual impossibility. And that sin has done such a number on us, the way that we are born into this world, that it takes a miracle in the very power of God to transform us, to do what we cannot do for ourselves. We can't please God is what the ultimate implication is. Those who are in the flesh cannot please God. We can't please God any more than a dead plant could come alive and root itself in a different soil. So brothers and sisters, this is a big and sobering reality. One, it helps us to understand the nature of salvation and that we're not just asking people. God isn't just asking us again to look at a list and check some boxes off where we didn't check them off before. This isn't about behavior change. This is about having the right information. This is about transformation. This is about preaching the gospel, proclaiming the power of God revealed in Jesus to people, all kinds of people who could not change the deepest thing about ourselves, and proclaiming that God has done something in Jesus to fix that deep problem. And if we would trust and believe, then we can know and experience the life and peace of God that he intends for us to experience by his Spirit. That comes through his Son. This is why personal reform and behavior change won't save us. If you're trying to do that by attending church or sitting in here or doing good things, stop. What you need is deeper and greater. We need deliverance from the power and bondage of sin in our nature, and we need transformation at the very core of who we are. Transformation that delights in God, that loves God, that wants to obey Him, that's free from the penalty and power of sin. And that even when we do sin and fall short, the desire is still there. The love of God is still within us, poured out in our hearts through Jesus. And we get up and we keep walking in alignment with who God is. Something's different about us. We can no longer disobey God and pursue our own direction and live under our own power anymore. It doesn't feel the same. We've been made new. God gives us that gift through Jesus. He has pleased God when we could never please God in the flesh. He has lived perfectly in our place when we lived imperfectly. He has sacrificed Himself as a sin offering, bearing the punishment of our sins. For all of these things that we did in living in the flesh, He bore them on Himself on the cross. And then He was resurrected powerfully from death, bearing our punishment, the death we deserved, spiritual deadness to God, and everlasting punishment. Jesus took that for all who believe and trust in Him, so that we might be able to live with the life of God in our souls and with the peace of God, knowing that He is for us and with us.